Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Anna Karenina, part 1, chapter 2. Then we'll be reading chapter 3. Although he was entirely guilty and was conscious of it, almost everyone in the house, even the nurse, Daya, Alexandrovna's best friend, sided with him. What are your thoughts on this line? Steva justifies his actions. What do you think of his justifications? And let's have some predictions. What kind of person do you think Daya will be? Those are the questions I asked you guys about Chapter 2. Quick reminder before we dive into the discussion. Excuse me. You can support this podcast over at patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. I believe that's the URL. I should probably double check. patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. Big thank you to those who support the podcast in that fashion. You guys are awesome. Very much appreciated. If you enjoy the podcast and the work that goes into it, you can do a little donation of as little as $1. And it's very much appreciated. Soma Stars said, regarding question 2, Steve's justifications of his actions, blech, baff, his attitude is basically, my wife is unattractive and boring, therefore I'm allowed dalliances. He acknowledges she is a good mother, but no real respect is offered for her because of this. No respect offered that she has reared and raised all his kids. No bond formed over this. Just she isn't pretty and she bores me. And he doesn't seem to have much guilt over the matter. He just feels a thrill whenever he thinks of his paramour and cringes at the fact that he's been caught. Don't feel much compassion for him at this point. Mr. Assassin 777 said, I laughed when he said he's not upset that he cheated, but that he couldn't hide it well enough. It seems he does acknowledge that it's all his fault and he wronged his wife, but he doesn't feel remorse over it. Captain Lush said, I agree. I feel no compassion for him at this point, and I am semi-disgusted by his self-pity. And yet, why does everyone in his household side with him? Is it only because of his status as the head of the household, and their employment depends on him? Or perhaps he's really as charming as he thinks he is? JMama8779 said, that's the impression I got. They're probably beholden to him, so they are naturally siding with him. We do see that. They generally want reconciliation so things can go back to normal, though. Yula is a pimp says, there's also the possibility that they don't side with him. This is from the mind of a man who feels as though he did nothing wrong and seems to have a bit of an ego. I doubt he's had conversations with his servants to see what they are on. What side they are on, sorry. He's almost certainly inferring their positions, and because of his self-image, maybe assuming it to be positive. This makes a lot of sense, considering his narcissism, said Captain Lush. You know, I just got to say at this point, we're kind of running away with this theory that he's extremely narcissistic, extremely sort of almost like the dictator of the home, and that all of this is just his self-image. He just assumes he's the boss. He assumes everyone, he probably is the boss of the household just because of the way things were back then, but that he assumes that everyone's on his side just because of his ego and these kinds of things. I don't really see it from my own point of view that much evidence of those things. Not really. Not a whole lot. You know, I've seen that he cheated and that he didn't feel much guilt over it. But I think we've jumped some pretty big conclusions from that point. And I say this because we haven't met Daya yet. And also because even Daya's best friend seems to have sided with him. Now, back then, the father, he would not have been more the boss of those servants than his wife would have been. They would have been pretty equal in terms of who's the head of the household. So it's not like they need to side with him because he's their boss. Like, I think the wife would have as much command over the help in the house as he would. So I don't think it's that. I don't think they're just siding with him because they need to keep their job sort of thing. It could be, though. It could be, but I'm just casting my mind back to War and Peace, and it didn't really seem like the patriarch of the house was the ultimate boss of the house. There was just as much power over the servants from the matriarch of the house. That's what I thought. And the other reason I bring this up is because we haven't met Dyer, and because everyone seems to be siding with him, it might be like his attitude to her towards her is quite dismissive. It's not very nice, right? But that bitterness might be both ways. Like maybe they're both quite nasty to each other, and the reason that he doesn't feel guilt is because he's done something, you know, nasty to him, to her, but also maybe she does nasty things back to him. It could be a back and forth kind of thing, which might be why the other people in the household just want them to be civil. That would be my guess. That seems more the way marriages sour. You know, like if you've been together for a long time, I mean, these people aren't even that old, but I suppose mid-30s was older back then than it is now. So they would have been together for over 10 years sort of thing, maybe even 15 or more. Like when a marriage back then or in any goes sort of sour and there becomes bitterness between the two, if they have decided to stay together, and back then I think as well that would have been the norm. I think divorce was very rare back then, so you just sort of stuck it out. There becomes that thing of like just keep out of each other's way and be civil and mutual respect, but that love and lust and all the rest, it, you know, that's not really there anymore. It's just like a partnership. And that would be what I suspect was happening there. So, I don't know. I want to read more before I start thinking he's awful. I don't know if he's awful. He might just be in an unhappy marriage and they're both unhappy equally. Swim said the mama fisher said, well, Dyer, let's see. The woman is 33 and given birth already to 7 children, of which she has seen 2 already die. Yeah, that's a good point. That's hard to watch. Hard thing to do to raise 7 children and have 2 of them die. Old Steva allows her to run the house, which means she does all the work of managing a household while he receives all of the benefits. No wonder Dyer is worn out. Another good point. I suspect that the servant sided with him because Dyer is the household taskmaster, while Steva gets to be the amiable master who is pleasant to everyone. Now, in terms of her managing the household while he receives the benefits, do remember that these are high society people with servants, so her managing the household is her telling the servants what to do. It's not her doing the housework, per se, I would assume, at least. And he does say that she fusses over the daily management of the house or something along those lines. So it might be that she's a bit of a hard taskmaster. I suspect that the servant sided with him because Dyer is the household taskmaster, while Steva gets to be the amiable master who is pleasant to everyone. This chapter seems to imply that the former governess is pregnant. I suspect that Dyer will be quite petulant to Steva, and Steva will jolly her out of it. Also, where would she go? She probably has no money of her own, no way to earn a living, and divorce carried quite the stigma. Also, it seems that this current episode might be just the latest one, and everyone knows their roles to play household dramas. Yeah, again, with the, like, where would she go? She probably has no money. She probably does, because those high society marriages were a marriage between one wealthy family and another, typically, back then. So he probably chose her, or she probably chose him, because of wealth, really, and like family status, that kind of thing. RJ said, I also got the implications that the governess was pregnant with Steve's child. This line, it's true, it's bad her having been a governess in our house from the Maud version, and the P&V version was even more ambiguous, although I think I have a dodgy EPUB of that translation. Sort of confused me, and I had to reread it a few times. I thought maybe his wife Dyer also used to be one of the house's governesses. Tekrific said, in the Bartlett one, it said, and the worst of all is that she is already ... just my luck. It certainly made me think she's pregnant. I didn't have that. I just was like, oh, I wonder what's admitted there, but I didn't even jump to that conclusion. Little Birdie 8612 said, in the societal climate that the story takes place in, adultery was much more severe a crime for a woman than it was for a man. In an extramarital affair, Oblonsky may still be accepted and respected by society. Meanwhile, note that if Daria had been the one to commit infidelity, the consequences would have been disastrous for her. She would no longer have the respect of her nurse and would very likely be ostracized from her social sphere. The fact that everyone in the household sides with Oblonsky shows that they view the situation from a societal perspective, dictated by rules to maintain appearances and preserve a reputation before the public, not from an emotional or moral standpoint. They don't seem to consider the pain it must cost Daria, who is innocent. Tolstoy opens with this crisis as a very good prequel or foreshadow to a much larger social, emotional, and moral conflict that Anna faces later in the novel. Meanwhile, Oblonsky's justifications are only weak and seem to lack the emotional depth that should be there between a husband and wife. I think Tolstoy said, I don't know if it was in this book or someplace else, that sensual desire indulged for its own sake is the misuse of something sacred. This is something Oblonsky accepts too, when he says there's something sordid and vulgar about making love to one's own governess. But he can't exactly place in his mouth what this sordid and vulgar thing is. That he has committed a desecration to his wife's love and honour. And he immediately follows this momentary repentance with, but what a governess! Thus sinking back to more sensuous thoughts. It makes it hard for the reader to believe he's actually sorry for what he did. He defends his actions by saying, I did not interfere with her at all. I let her run the house and the children as she liked. Oblonsky believes that he can justify the way he took liberties with the governess within her own house. With the fact that he allowed Daria liberties within the home as well, housekeeping, raising children. Tolstoy puts this at the root of the damaged relationship between the husband and wife. Oblonsky doesn't consider himself to belong to the home. To him, the home only belongs to his wife. He doesn't seem to take part in family life because he doesn't consider it to be part of his sphere. One can imagine that he spends the larger part of his day outside the house with society, leaving Daria with the responsibilities of the family. That's why he's not as sorry as he should be for the damage he did to his relationship with his wife and children. Tolstoy believes that a person's life should be centered in the home, both man and woman. I actually read Anna Karenina about 2 years ago, but I've never had the opportunity to discuss it till now, so I won't comment on what I think Daria will be like. Very cool. Very good comment there. Thanks very much, little birdie. I Am Norwegian said, I'm getting the feeling that Daria isn't very likable. In the first chapter, she was described as always being anxious and a little dim. Her hot temper and torrents of harsh words were also mentioned. Steva, however, is a prince, handsome and affable. This might also be part of some commentary Tolstoy is making on the changing perception of the sanctity of marriage. The PNV introduction mentions something like that. I don't think Steva feels that he is justified. He knows he's guilty and admits so even to himself. But I also think that if his wife hadn't found out, that he wouldn't have cared much at all. Steva thinks Daria is plain and common. Their relationship is without love. Maybe it's more of an arrangement of utility between them. Hopefully we'll learn about how they got together, which will clear this up. Either way, it doesn't seem like Steva has much respect for his marriage. I would agree with that. Sluggy said, I think this sentence can tell you a lot about both Daria and Steva's characters in a few words. At this point, all we really know about Steva is that he has cheated on his wife, yet he is already instinctively likable to us as the reader. Now, that's true. I don't dislike him. But I do think he's done something rather horrible. This line quickly confirms that the rest of the household shares these feelings, and in just a few interactions we can see his generally agreeable and gregarious character. I imagine that Steva is not much interested in the administration in the household, so he can probably be friendly with the servants, while Daria is stuck running the household and holding them accountable, and thus is probably not liked as much. The fact that she is being cheated on and still doesn't seem to sway the options of the servants says a lot. Opinions? I'm not sure what that meant. His justification sounds like those of a person who is simply trying to rationalize their behavior and not confront the effects of their actions. He doesn't regret his actions, just the fact that he was found out. He feels badly that Daria is upset, but only regrets that he was not more careful in covering it up. Daria, at this point, strikes me as very traditional, but not meek. She also seems unlikable, but not cruel, and perhaps a little naive. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to meeting Daria and seeing what she is indeed like. Minial said, my first thought, the nurse. In the Finnish translation, this line calls her the wet nurse. Well, that's a very different thing. I do find it quite weird that even Daya's best friend sides with him. Even if Daya was an unpleasant person, I would expect her best friend to like her. Maybe it was more to do with Steva being the master of the house and basically everyone's boss. I find his justifications terrible. The wife has given birth to so many children, her body probably isn't what it used to be, but there's his children after all. Maybe she isn't very likable, at least for most people, or she finds it hard to bond with people. Mr. Assassin 777 said, "So are others liking the Garnet version? I heard bad things, but I'm finding it nice and easy to read thus far." Simastar said, "I'm doing both Maud and Garnet. Maud is my official copy, but I fall back on Garnet for these discussions since it is easily available on Project Gutenberg. So far, no major differences, but I find Maud a little easier to read in places." All About Alice said, "I used the Garnet version of Brothers Karamazov, and I liked the lyrical aspect of the translation, but I found at times it was hard to follow if the language itself was over-dramatic or if the Garnet translated it that way. I'm trying the Bartlett version out this time, but I think if you like it so far, then keep on." Atomic Gecko said, "Chapter 2 leads me to think that Steva is generally a manipulative scumbag with a winning smile. According to him, it is Dolly's fault. She is upset over his indiscretions, especially since she should have known about them all along. Anyway, besides, she's old and worn out in her early 30s after bearing multiple children. How could Steva blame himself for straying? And have you gotten a good look at the French governess? He also has his entire staff wrapped around his little finger. He has charmed them, perhaps with a glowing personality, which may come to further add to his self-justification for his own actions. Why waste all his charm on this haggard, spent wife? The others in the house like him because he tells them what they want to hear and how they want to hear it. Hell, even the narrator has a soft spot for Steva. Dolly is left to deal not only with the day-to-day of the household, but also with the consequences of Steva's manipulation and any deceit therein pertaining to his dealings with the staff. Perhaps a case of daddies mean fun, mummies mean business to the extreme. Shit hit the fan 3 days ago, but it has been simmering for a while. Dolly has mostly kept her mouth shut because she has been able to delude herself with the children and the runnings of the house, but the note snapped her out of it and into action. She's going to be a firecracker from here on out." What am I up to here? Column Biatch said, "The nurse siding with Steva might be due to Steva's charm and societal position. I think it also speaks to the prevalence of adultery among the aristocratic that is almost normal for men of that rank to cheat on their wife. Steva is a hedonist who is extremely lacking in self-awareness. He barely even thinks about his family. While he can sympathize with her misery, he completely disassociates his role in it." Keeping It Well says, quote, response, "He is the master of the house and seemingly outwardly charming. Daya is too busy to charm her staff all day. Justifications, it's bullshit, of course. But whatever helps a person sleep at night, I guess. We also have to remember that we are talking about the patriarchy to the max here. How dare she age? And Daya, probably not very pleasant. I hope she goes full badass, though. Wait, but the governess is pregnant, all right? Dr. Nature 96 said, "I think there are information we're missing, but that the others in the house know, that would make them side with Steva. Possibly that Steva has been a very good person and they still see him that way despite the act, or that Daya is not as respected as he is. Not so likely, I think, because she is described as a good wife. It's quite a weak reason to say that it happened just because the governess was there and that she is attractive. On the other hand, I feel bad for him because of how he admits that he never loved his wife. I think it is probably painful for him to be with someone for so long that he doesn't love and to support his family with a wife, he doesn't love. I think the intrigue is a result of this. Hence, I think the problem is deeper than just an affair. How will they resolve this problem that he doesn't love her? Even he says that she doesn't deserve this. No, I think his act is not justified, even though it is understood. I may get disagreements here, but I stand my ground because, imagining it from Steva's perspective, he has suffered not just from a loveless marriage, but also maybe the guilt of it. I don't encourage the intrigue. Because of the fact that the staff, even Daya's best friend, sides with Steva, I think it is possible that Daya has an unlikable personality. Meanwhile, she is someone committed and disciplined as she does her motherly duties. She's possibly a trusting person if she never suspected Steva of any intrigue. Additionally, I'm curious why most people in the house, including and especially Daya's best friend, side with Steva. There must be something about him, or Daya, or both. Another curious thing, he's not repentant of the act, but that he failed to hide it from her. I think this means that he might do such things again, but also that he wants things to go on peacefully. He doesn't love his wife, but doesn't want chaos in the family, so he secretly has an intrigue to satisfy his personal needs. To some extent, he cares for the family, but maybe he just doesn't want things to go against him, like now. I think Steva is scared of a bigger problem than the intrigue. The intrigue is one thing, but how can he explain to Daya that he doesn't love her? That is the bigger problem that he is scared of. He must now face that problem with her. Choo 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 Train said, Steva seems to live without purpose or drive. Whether that comes from giving up or never putting in the time to think deeply about what he wants is unclear, though I'm leaning towards the latter. The sheer thoughtlessness of his part of how people actually feel, especially Daya, and his preoccupation with how things appear to society point to a man that is accustomed to living the way people have told him to live. Get a wife, have kids, cheat on your wife because she is only a year younger and she's worn out, let her have control of the household, be charming. It's like he's ticking boxes and going through the motions of what an aristocratic young man should do slash be like. He doesn't have a meaningful attachment to his wife and kids and does not try to understand them. Instead, he holds them at a distance, calling them the children and Daya Arkadyevich, no diminutive, used formal address, ironically instead. I pity Steva with his oblivious, banal life and everyone he carelessly hurts. Thanatos 388 says, well, it looks like nobody likes this wife, and everyone seems very reverent of this prince. His justifications are BS, but it just reveals how little he thinks of the relationship with his wife. He doesn't respect her clearly, just content that he allows her to live her life managing the house. Maybe in later chapters we'll see these two live almost entirely separate lives anyway. And Dr. Nature 96 said, unpopular opinion, it's debatable either way, I didn't get the impression that he doesn't respect his wife or the marriage, as some have mentioned in this post. But he felt all the difficulty of his position and was sorry for his wife, his children, and himself. Possibly he might have managed to conceal his sins better from his wife if he had anticipated that the knowledge of them would have had such an effect on her. That's funny that he didn't anticipate that the knowledge would have such an effect on her. Maybe he thought, oh, she's not going to care what I do. Like, what kind of situation would your marriage be in if you thought your wife wouldn't really mind if she found out you were having an affair? Possibly he might have managed to conceal his sins better from his wife if he had anticipated that the knowledge of them would have had such an effect on her. If he didn't care at all, says Dr. Nature 96, he wouldn't care about the effect it has had on his wife and children. If he didn't respect the marriage, he could have left a long time ago to find and marry someone he did love. More info needed on how this marriage came to be and their marriage customs. Well, it was a long time ago, and marriages were really death do us part back then, to a big extent. I mean, divorce was still perfectly possible, but it was certainly stigmatized. Unfortunately, an attractive governess arrived and he was struck by her. Suddenly he found someone he was attracted to the point where he let himself go and commit the sin. While I do not condone his behavior, I think he was in a position where he wasn't happy, healthy, or at peace, and this affected him, playing a big part in causing the affair. Yeah, normal people have affairs, right? Like, I'm not saying they're not awful, and I'm not saying you should go out and have an affair. Never have an affair. It's a terrible thing to do. But normal people do it. It's a fault that happens to people who are otherwise good. Their relationship has turned into something that they resent or that gives them, you know, anxiety even, or, you know, the relationship itself is a source of unhealthiness in their life and they're stuck in it for whatever reason. People get stuck in relationships for all kinds of social pressures or whatever, you know. You guys know why people end up stuck in relationships when they would probably rather leave. Millions of reasons. And they end up doing something like that. I'm not saying I condone it. I'm not saying you should do it. But I never just think if someone had an affair, they're instantly like terrible because I understand that they're still just human, and it's a pretty human thing to do, I think. Maybe I'm just more forgiving. I'm probably a very forgiving person. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just think, I don't know. I've known people who've done it and then felt remorse, and, you know, their relationships fell apart. And at the end of the day, I didn't think they're a terrible person. I just think they were in a bad situation and they got out of it in the wrong way. They made some mistakes. So I'm not ready to hate Steve just yet. But I think he's done some silly things. That's what I'll say. Anyway, let's keep reading, shall we? Let's read, what are we up to? Chapter 3 of this book. Chapter 3 of Anna Karenina. Goes a bit like this. When he was quite dressed, Oblonsky sprinkled some scent on himself, pulled down his cuffs, and as usual, distributing in different pockets his cigarette case, matches, pocketbook, and the watch with its double chain and a bunch of charms, he shook out his handkerchief and, feeling clean, sweet, healthy, and physically bright in spite of his misfortune, went with a slight spring at each step into the dining room where his coffee stood ready. Just putting the light on because I can't really see what I'm reading. Okay. Where his coffee stood ready. Besides the coffee lay letters and papers from the office. He read the letters, one of which impressed him unpleasantly. It concerned the sale of a forest on his wife's estate and came from a dealer who wanted to buy that forest. This forest had to be sold, but until he was reconciled with his wife, the sale was quite out of the question. What was most unpleasant was that a financial consideration would now be mixed up with the impending reconciliation. The idea that he might be biased by that consideration, might seek a reconciliation in order to sell the forest, offended him. Having looked through his letters, Oblonsky drew the departmental papers towards him, and turning over the pages of two files, made a few notes on them with a big pencil, then pushing them aside, began to drink his coffee. At the same time, he unfolded the still damp morning paper and began reading. Oblonsky subscribed to and read a liberal paper, not an extreme liberal paper, but one that expressed the opinions of the majority. And although neither science, art, nor politics specially interested him, he firmly held to the opinions of the majority and of his paper on those subjects, changing his views when the majority changed theirs, or rather not changing them, they changed imperceptibly of their own accord. Oblonsky's tendency and opinions were not his by deliberate choice, they came of themselves, just as he did not choose the fashion of his hats or coats, but wore those of the current style. Living in a certain social set, and having a desire, such as generally develops with maturity, for some kind of mental activity, he was obliged to hold views just as he was obliged to have a hat. If he had a reason for preferring liberalism to the conservatism of many in his set, it was not that he considered liberalism more reasonable, but because it suited his manner of life better. The Liberal Party maintained that everything in Russia was bad, and it was a fact that Oblonsky had many debts and decidedly too little money. The Liberal Party said that marriage was an obsolete institution which ought to be reformed, and family life really gave Oblonsky very little pleasure, forcing him to tell lies and dissemble, which was quite contrary to his nature. The Liberal Party said, or rather hinted, that religion was only good as a check on the more barbarous portion of the population, and Oblonsky really could not stand through even a short church service without pain in his feet, nor understand why one should use all that dreadful high-flown language about another world, while one can live so merrily in this one. Besides, Oblonsky was fond of a pleasant joke, and sometimes liked to perplex a simple-minded man by observing that, if you're going to be proud of your ancestry, why stop short at Prince Rurik and repudiate your oldest ancestor, the ape? Thus, liberalism became habitual to Oblonsky, and he loved his paper as he loved his after-dinner cigar, for the slight mistiness it produced in his brain. He read the leading article, which explained that in our time it is needless to raise the cry that radicalism is threatening to swallow up all conservative elements and to maintain that the government should take measures to crush the hydra of revolution, for on the contrary, In our opinion, the danger lies not in an imaginary hydra of revolution, but in an obstinate clinging to tradition which hampers progress, etc. He also read the financial article in which Bentham and Mill were mentioned and hits were made at the ministry. With his natural quickness of perception, he understood the meaning of each hit, whence it came, for whom it was meant, and what had provoked it. And this, as usual, gave him a certain satisfaction. But today the satisfaction was marred by the memory of Matrina Filimonovna's advice, and of the fact that there was all this trouble in the house. He went on to read that there was a rumour of Count Boost's journey to Wiesbaden, that there would be no more grey hairs, that a light brougham was for sale, and a young person offered her services. But all this information did not give him the quiet, ironical pleasure it usually did. Having finished the paper, his second cup of coffee, and a buttered roll, he got up, flicked some crumbs off his waistcoat, and, expanding his broad chest, smiled joyfully, not because there was anything specially pleasant in his mind. No, the smile was but the result of a healthy digestion. But that joyful smile at once brought everything back to his mind, and he grew thoughtful. Then he heard the sound of the two childish voices outside the door, and recognized them as the voices of his eldest daughter, Tanya, and of his little boy, Grisha. They were dragging something along and had upset it. "I told you not to put passengers on the roof," the girl shouted in English. "Now pick them up." "Everything is disorganized," thought Oblonsky. "Here are the children running wild," and going to the door he called them in. They left the box, which represented a train, and came to their father. The girl, her father's pet, ran boldly in, embraced him, and hung, laughing, on his neck, pleased, as she always was, to smell the familiar scent of his whiskers. Having kissed his face, flushed by stooping, and lit up by tenderness, the girl unclasped her hands and was going to run away, but he held her back. "How's Mama?" he asked, passing his hand over his daughter's smooth, delicate little neck, as he smilingly said, "Good morning," in answer to the little boy's greeting. He was conscious of not caring as much for the boy as for the girl, but did his best to treat them both alike. The boy felt this and did not respond to his father's cold smile. "Mama, she's up," said the girl. Oblonsky smiled. "That means that she has again not slept all night," he thought. "Yes, but is she cheerful?" he added. The girl knew that her father and mother had quarrelled, and that her mother could not be cheerful, and also that her father must know this, so that his putting the question to her so lightly was all pretense, and she blushed for him. He noticed this and blushed too. "I don't know," she said. "She said we were not to have any lessons, but must walk with Miss Hull to Grandmama's." "Well, you may go, my little Tanyakin." "Oh, wait," he said, still holding her and stroking her delicate little hand. Taking a box of sweets from the mantelpiece where he had put it the day before, he chose two sweets, which he knew she liked best, a chocolate and a coloured cream. "For Grisha?" she asked, holding out the chocolate. "Yes, yes," and stroking her shoulder, he kissed her hair at the roots of her neck and let her go. "The carriage is ready," said Matthew, "and there is a woman on business waiting for you." "Been here long?" "About half an hour." "How often must I tell you to let me know at once when anyone is here?" "But I must give you time to finish your coffee," answered Matthew, in a friendly, rude tone, with which it was impossible to be angry. "Well, ask her in at once," said Oblonsky, his face wrinkling with vexation. The woman, widow of a petty official named Kalinin, was petitioning for something impossible and absurd, but nevertheless Oblonsky, with his usual politeness, asked her to sit down and heard her attentively to the end, gave her full instructions how and to whom to apply, and even wrote briskly and fluently in his large, graceful and legible hand a little note to a personage who might be of use to her. Having dismissed her, he took his hat and paused to consider whether he had forgotten anything. He found he had forgotten nothing but what he wanted to forget, his wife. "Oh yes," his head dropped, and his handsome face became worried. "To go or not to go?" he asked himself, and his inner consciousness answered that he ought not to go, that it could only result in hypocrisy, that it was impossible to restore their relations because it was impossible to render her attractive and capable of exciting love, or to turn him into an old man incapable of love. Nothing except hypocrisy and falsehood could now result, and these were repugnant to his nature. Nevertheless, it will have to be done sooner or later. After all, things can't remain as they are, he said, trying to brace himself. He expanded his chest, took out a cigarette, lit it, took two whiffs, then threw it into a pearl-shell ashtray, and crossing the drawing room with rapid steps, he opened the door which led into his wife's bedroom. All right, there we go. That's the end of chapter 3. Sorry for the car horn going off in the background. It sounds like my neighbor's alarm or someone nearby has had their alarm triggered. Car alarm. Oh, there it is. It finished. All right. Another quick reminder about the Patreon. That's what I'll do. Patreon.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Also, Project Tolstoy is nearing its release. Its public release. Project Tolstoy. Codename Project Tolstoy. Little project I've been working on. I think you guys are going to like it. Just trying to get the hype machine going. If anyone out there knows what it is or has a guess, I'd be interested. I reckon Techrific could probably crack the case if we put him on it. I'm not going to confirm or deny anything, but something awesome is a-coming. Project Tolstoy. Head over to the subreddit, The Hemingway List. Have your say about this chapter. Other than that, thanks for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.